This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition to the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's episode 201. After a not so great showing in the season opener, the Arizona Cardinals lose 24-6 and looked bad doing so. They start off the season 0-1. And this episode is, this is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about all the bad, the little bit of the good, and then, you know, what concerns we have moving forward. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today NFL wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. Well, my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, from SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals sites. And so, you know, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got a lot to talk about, don't we? But none of it is really pleasant.
No, I don't think we thought this was the first show of the season. I think we thought maybe we'd be talking about a Cardinals win, maybe a Cardinals loss. I don't think we'd be questioning whether or not it's already time to eulogize the 2018 Cardinals. Like we didn't see that coming at all.
No. And I'm going to still keep some sort of optimism. There was a lot not to like, but there's still a lot of season left. And guess what? Aside from the Rams, the entire NFC West is 0-1. But, oh, one thing we forgot to mention is the great news that actually really made me very frustrated was the news of David Johnson's contract. David Johnson got his contract, 3 years, $39 million, up to $45 million. But there was no warning at all. It happened on a Saturday afternoon when Seth was away. And when I was at dinner getting ready to go to my Sun Devils football game, college football, which was, you know, the Sun Devils look good so far, but
the only good football team in Arizona.
Yeah. So, but what the, why, why on a Saturday afternoon, late afternoon, would you make that sort of news? Like, wait till Monday, do that on Friday afternoon.
Think how much better it would be if they announced it today or yesterday.
Oh my God!
After the crap show that was game one,
it would change things tremendously. But so we didn't even get to talk about that. We really didn't even get to hear from David Johnson because the first time he talks to the media, he's pissed because of how he played and how the team played. So it's not like we even got to reminisce on this. But here's the deal. The Cardinals, in my opinion, it was a beautiful contract because it pays Johnson a lot. There are, what was it, 24, I think Joel Corey tweeted it out, with something like 24 million in change of full guarantees, and then it's worth as much, like the guarantees go up to 30 million with some offsets. It's worth 39 million over 3 years, as much as 45, so it's not anywhere near the Devontae Freeman contract in the low, and it can be as worth as much as Todd Gurley's, and it's just a niche above Le'Veon Bell's franchise tag. So he's getting the big money, but the part that's beautiful about it with the Cardinals, it's only 3 years, which means it takes him through age 30, and that's it. So he can cash in again on a slightly, you know, maybe not, it's not going to be the same type of deal again, but he will have gone through and the Cardinals are protected, because even if he's healthy throughout the next 3 years, the next 4 years, is the fact that you get that dreaded age 30, that they can Calais Campbell him and someone else can pay him a lot of money and he can be productive for 2-3 more years, and or he can be the next Larry Fitzgerald. And so I thought that it was perfect. I know still at this moment, why couldn't we have done this before? Were we waiting for Steve Keim to not be suspended anymore? It seemed like this was an easy deal to do.
It did. And it was right around what you and I talked about from a financial aspect, you know, 3 years, $45 million, we said was probably going to be the high end of things. And it is the high end. I mean, if everything goes 100% right for him. He's going to make 3 years, or he's going to make $45 million over 3 years. The guaranteed, I am going to guess, is what the issue was the entire time, is that he was looking for that $30 million in guaranteed money, and the Cardinals were probably around, you know, 20, 25. And that makes a huge difference when you're talking about guarantees, because guaranteed money is, as you and I have talked about before, in contracts in the NFL, it's literally the only thing that matters. Nothing else matters in the NFL. And so if he wasn't getting $30 million, which you and I are guessing, but it's a very educated guess that he wasn't getting $30 million. And so that's what happened and was probably the sticking point, because that's the whole thing about this. The numbers were pretty cut and dry, right? Like we knew it was 10, 12 million a year, but the question was always, what was the guaranteed money going to be? And now we know the answer. I mean, he's guaranteed basically in theory to 10 million a year over the next 3 years.
And what I want to see is the signing bonus, and I want to see what he's getting next year when they've got the big cap space next year. If they're going to give him a balloon payment like the 49ers did with Jimmy Garoppolo this year, to give him a big, rather than a signing bonus, they give him a huge roster bonus that's guaranteed to cover some of the cap hit over this year and the other 2 years after that. That's kind of what I'm looking for. But thank goodness. But the timing really, it was, I think it was foolish, the timing that it was. And maybe they rushed it because it was going to be leaked anyway. But here's the thing. There's no upside to doing that on a Saturday night before a game, because then if you look at what the Cardinals has done with other players, so Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, Chandler Jones. Now Chandler Jones was early in the year, but they do these contract extensions during training camp, and then you get to have those guys get in front of the media and you get to talk about it and how great the organization is and taking care of things, how they want to play here. But then, you know, the first thing we asked David after the game on Sundays, well, how's the field of contracts? And I'm contracts first thing. He was visibly unhappy. He was not pleased with how the game went. And even in the locker room, all the reporters were there ready to talk to him. And then he got a call and he walked off. So we had to wait for another 5-10 minutes for him. So he was not a happy, he was not a happy man because of how things went during the game. And, you know, it's like, I'm not even talking about the contract. It's like, he was not happy about it because he was unhappy with this play. So, but that's out of the way at least. But it does cement the Cardinals. So here's the thing. As shrewd as it was in a way for the Cardinals in terms of team friendly, it does show something that I think, it, as we've looked over the years, under Michael Bidwill and with Steve Keim, you players who perform will get paid and will be taken care of, which means that that's something to see around the league. Now, the Rams did that, and I think that's kind of a thing here. They're late, they got to do that. But the Cardinals are sending that same message. Hey, we take care of our guys. We take care of our guys. Come to our team. We're going to pay you well if you play well. And I love that. I just wish we could have had a better circumstance about it. This should have happened during training camp. And if it wasn't going to happen until now, it should have happened earlier in the week or Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, and it is odd that they did it kind of right before the game when there was nothing that could be discussed, like you said, for the media, and so then it becomes a very, you know, unfortunate situation because you didn't have access to him, and now he's just gotten paid $39 million. Everybody wants to talk about it, but what's the biggest issue? Oh, well, they played awful. Maybe one of the worst games of his career, not from that he played poorly, but that the team did. And now all of a sudden he's got a, you know, now people want to talk about the contract. And so that's frustrating for him, but it's also, you know, frustrating for you guys because you got to do your job.
Yeah. Yeah. So enough with that, but let's talk about the Cardinals and their really, it was embarrassing. It was a terrible way to start the season. So they lose 24-6. Now, it's not like they were alone. Every single team that had a new coach lost. So seven teams with new coaches are 0-7. This is not unheard of. And in fact, historically, this is completely normal. The Cardinals haven't had a head coach get a win in their debut since Larry Wilson did in 1979.
Yeah.
Bruce Arians didn't win his first game. Ken Whisenhunt didn't win his first game. Danny Green didn't win his first game. So this is something we're talking longer than your lifetime, nearly my entire lifetime. Now, the Cardinals were in St. Louis. When I was 2 years old, the heck if I knew anything about the Cardinals or the NFL. So in my entire lifetime, they've never had a coach get a win in their first game. So this is not something to panic about. Nonetheless, let's talk about the bad, because there was plenty of bad to go around.
Well, and then the other thing I will say is this, you know, at least we're not the Detroit Lions, where there's already rumors that the veterans are unhappy with Matt Patricia.
What?
So, I mean, that was just reported. We're recording on a Tuesday night. And so I think it was Pro Football Talk or one of the sites. It's on Twitter. You know, they're already unhappy with Matt Patricia. So there you go. I mean, again, it can always be worse, right? I mean, that's what we got to remember. But yeah, I mean, when you look at it from all of that, it's unfortunate. And it was not what we expected from the team. We expected for Steve Wilks to be successful. I mean, we did. We expected for Steve Wilks to have a very disciplined, a very physical team. And that's not what we saw. And I think for us, you know, that are cover the team, that listen to Wilks talk, that have seen him practice, you know, all of these things, that is not what you expected in game one. Even if you're a bad team, that's fine. But this didn't look like a bad team. This looked like a team that wasn't prepared, that had no idea what to expect from their opponent, and then had no real, you know, game plan going in once their game plan got thrown off.
And for me, it starts with, you know, this is what Steve Wilks always said. It starts up front. It all starts up front with the offensive line and the defensive line. And I think we see a team that's built this way, that this team is going to be built on the defense has to be stout up front. And that will allow the offensive line to be a strong running team, methodical, moving the ball down the field. And that's where things fell apart early. The Cardinals were abysmal against the run. And it was embarrassing, too, because guess who it was against? It was against Adrian Peterson, whom the Cardinals were willing to let go and no one wanted until Darius Geis went down with an injury. But it wasn't just him. It was also Chris Thompson. And they just they had nothing. They had no answer for the running game up front. They were manhandled. They were just moved all over the place. So the linebackers played well. The defensive line did not. I mean, they were getting beat at the point of attack. They weren't in the right spots. They gave up almost 200 rushing yards. Adrian Peterson had 93 yards. Chris Thompson had another 60-something. What was it? He had 65 yards. And then on top of that, it was just the running backs. It's not even the running game, but they were picked apart methodically they went after the linebackers and safeties. But so for me, number one, that running, the ability to stop the run, because if they don't stop the run, this team will have no chance is what it appears to be.
Right. And there was a problem with physicality, and it was something that has been preached. This was going to be a physical team. We're going to, you know, be physical up front. We're going to own the line of scrimmage on both sides. And then you come out and you know, the running game on offense didn't look bad. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but on the other side of the ball, I mean, and we wondered after the Saints game, when they had their, you know, first string offensive line, a starting caliber NFL running back in Mark Ingram, and then a not starting caliber quarterback in Taysom Hill working, we wondered aloud, like, okay, what does this mean? Like, how does this work? And, you know, is this something to be concerned about? And it looked like the answer was no. And, you know, the Cowboys' vaunted running game did nothing against them, albeit with four of their five starting offensive linemen and no Ezekiel Elliott. But it's still, I mean, they were completely shut down. And so we thought, all right, this isn't something to be concerned about. And then in game one, I don't think that there was a bigger issue in game one than the fact that Adrian Peterson looked like Adrian Peterson again. I mean, it was like when he played for the Cardinals against Tampa Bay. It's just he didn't have that one long run to kind of tack on towards the end, but he was a grinded out. He was physical in between the tackles, and the Cardinals had no answer. And this was something that I guess you could see coming, and maybe we just didn't want to acknowledge that it was coming, because I don't think you can say that you didn't know it was coming or didn't see it coming because of that New Orleans game. I mean, I guess the one excuse that we gave was, well, they didn't have Dalen Buchanan and Josh Bynes, right? So they have their entire starting defense except their, you know, two of their three linebackers. And then what happens? Well, they get their starting linebackers back and they run mostly nickel, and the, you know, the Redskins just basically say, we dare you to stop us.
Yes, the comment that you made, maybe we should have seen this coming. I think we should have seen the problems coming, because as I was writing my takeaways piece after the game, almost every single one of the problems mirrored problems that we have written about in the preseason. We had questions about the run defense. They were great against San Diego. They were great against Dallas, and then against New Orleans, it was suspect. What are some of the other issues we ran across? Penalties. Penalties. 9 of them. Third down play. Yep, they struggled with that again too. So preseason struggled on third down offensively and defensively. They struggled on it on Sunday. They got no receiver production outside of Larry Fitzgerald. They, again, didn't get any receiver production out of Larry Fitzgerald. They had issues with dropped passes in the preseason. They had issues with dropped passes on Sunday. It was just a... Because I wrote this after the game, I don't want people to panic and think that the season's over. But this definitely raises concerns. I can completely understand, and especially when we're learning a new defensive scheme, something to keep in mind. When new defensive schemes are put into place with NFL teams, it often takes half a year to get things going. If you look at the beginning of the Bruce Arians era, when it was Ray Horton, it took a little while. It took a little while, and then the defense was unstoppable. So I get it, except that was going to be the calling card, and everyone talked about how much easier this defense is. But and I believe some of what Steve Wilks is saying. I don't want to believe that this defense is just garbage. That would just sort of ruin things. Steve Wilks said it was, you know, there was bad gap integrity. Guys are trying to do too much instead of, you know, and that's it. That is something that's hard to teach, to coach out of NFL players, especially when a lot of what these players were doing a year ago was they were able to do multiple things. We've got the one gap defense now, so they have one assignment as opposed to read and react like it was under Betchers or even Bowles. Or even Horton. And so I can excuse some of it, but it was just everything was bad about Sunday's game.
It was, and it was one of those frustrating things where, you know, like we said, we saw the issues ahead of time, but we just assumed that those were oh, it's preseason that's going to get corrected. And sometimes preseason does show you your warts, and it's not just as easy as, well, it's preseason, it's going to go away. And so when the Cardinals showed you that they were kind of a team that doesn't stop the run extremely well, well, we should have believed that. When they showed you that, you know, they don't have any wide receivers outside of Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson, well, we should have believed that. When they showed you that maybe Ricky Seals-Jones isn't on the precipice of a breakout, but he's just a nice, you know, kind of number two, number three tight end on a good team. We should have seen that. I mean, trust me, the pass that was dropped in the end zone by Ricky Seals-Jones, that was a abysmal pass. But it still was one that he needed to catch. In that time frame, in that portion of the game, the Cardinals needed somebody to make a play. And it just didn't happen. And when you look at it from that, that's what the concern was going in, is that were there enough guys that actually could make plays? And I think the answer still is no. I mean, we can't give another answer, can we?
Well, not really yet. Which leads to the next thing that really is kind of bad. And that was, what in the world happened to Sam Bradford? We've heard about the accuracy. We've heard about the play. And even the two of us have talked about multiple times on the show. If anything's going to do in Sam Bradford, it's not going to be his play. He's not going to play poorly. He played poorly. It was one of the, you know, especially for what we expected out of him. You know, with Carson Palmer, you'd get that. Drew Stanton, most certainly Blaine Gabbert. You'd have a few misfires. But Sam Bradford supposedly has this ball placement, this incredible accuracy to throw guys open. And he was bad. He just plain missed people. The ball was sailing high. He missed Ricky Seals-Jones badly, which led to an interception. There was the drop in the end zone by Seals-Jones as well, but that was poorly placed. What happened to Sam Bradford?
One of my writers, you know, I'm not sure if I exactly agree with it, but I mean, it's definitely a concern. You know, and you brought up all the points why, but one of my writers said the arm strength doesn't look like it's there for Sam Bradford. And maybe it's a situation where you look at Bradford's lack of playing time in the preseason. I mean, we talked about it, right? We talked about it when they did kind of turn him loose in that New Orleans game. We're like, where's this been? And then now you're sitting here, and they went back to kind of conservative, and they were going to grind it out, short dink and dunk passes, and that's all well and good. But like you said, there were some throws that we just haven't seen him miss the last two, three seasons when he's healthy. And he missed them. Now, so that again, that begs the question, is it because, you know, the injuries have just taken a toll on his body throughout his career? Is it that he just got a lot of rust he needs to knock off? I mean, he played two games last season, and really he played one game and a part of a game last season. Like, there are questions that need to be answered in this way, and I just don't know when we're going to have those answers. But I know right now that the answer is the fear of a number of people about how bad Sam Bradford is was 100% worth it and correct at this point. And now the conversation needs to become, you know, how does this get corrected? And for Sam's benefit, you hope it's just rust. But the other problem becomes, this leads to the unquestioned reality that we're going to start getting calls for Josh Rosen.
Absolutely. And It's already happening. I mean, Mike Garofalo on NFL Network talked about, and you know, he expects by week four that Rosen's doing that. And based on everything that we've seen, how everything's gone, it would be very disappointing for that to happen. But I mean,
in the same breath, if this, I mean, my goodness, and we'll talk about this, but if we're talking about how unprepared and how discombobulated this team looks again this time next week, I don't think they have a choice but to go to Rosen, because and we're talking about after game two, like, because they can't let this season just go. They can't punt this entire season, and that's kind of where they're at this point if they don't figure it out pretty quick.
Right, and that's the thing, is entering this week, we're going to talk about the game coming up with Rams, is like no one expects the Cardinals to beat the Rams, and probably everyone expects the Rams to win handily, but what we can't see again is ineptness. We can't see Bradford play poorly. It's one thing if they, you know, the defense does make some good plays, but heck, you know, they've got too many horses, and but we can't see, we cannot have a no touchdown, one interception, of a 57 passer rating but you just can't do it. You can't do it because we're talking about a guy that's got a career passer rating of a respectable 84.8, and then a little bit, probably about 85 when the season began. So that's a respectable. I mean, it's a starter worthy passer rating. We can't survive. And what will happen is what we've seen with Cardinals teams before. Fans will lose complete interest, and they'll become irrelevant until you put Josh Rosen in, because then there is intrigue.
Yeah, and then there's something to kind of get excited about. And so far, there's nothing. And it's, we don't expect that to continue. I mean, we don't, and we'll talk about that. But you know, from this game, from the perception after this game and what we saw in this game, the glass half full people that, you know, and you and I projected 7-9. It's not like we were saying this is an 11 win playoff team. I mean, we didn't do that, but the people that said, oh, they're 7-9, you know, we could see, you know, where they go 8-8 or 9-7. If a few things fall right, oh, those people that are projecting them to have the first or second pick in the draft, that's crazy. These people are crazy. And then they come out and put up this performance, and you go, oh, those people are not crazy at all.
That's what we spent the last several months talking about. People are crazy, think the Cardinals are going to be terrible. Oh, okay, maybe we don't know anything.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is, like you said, we're not out here saying – the Cardinals are going to, you know, they need to beat the Rams or the season's over. This is not a podcast where we came in saying they had, you know, they were going to make the playoffs this year, blah, blah, blah. We were saying we didn't expect them to make the playoffs. We expected them to be a competitive, competent team.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, if they come out of this game where it doesn't look like that again, you go, well, yeah, I don't know if this is competitive or competent at this point.
Now, a couple other issues on the bad side is the fact that the Cardinals just had bad play from, in particular, players who stood out as having poor performances, and that was Deion Buchanan and Trey Boston. Boston, you know, the first thing we see from Trey Boston is he lays down an illegal hit of Jordan Reed, and in the process gets completely trucked. They pick on him. They pick on Dan Buchanan. Looked lost. He wasn't active. You know, the speed, he wasn't any good in coverage. He wasn't able to catch up to people. And this was evident because kind of the game plan, because I don't think they targeted Patrick Peterson once. I'm pretty sure that I didn't see them
targeting him once. That doesn't mean they didn't, and Jess and I both missed it, but I didn't see it either.
But I don't think he went his way. But they certainly went after the safeties and linebackers. If you look at, you know, of Alex Smith's 21 completions, six went to Chris Thompson, two went to Adrian Peterson, one went to Vernon Davis, and another four to Jordan Reed. So 10, 12, 13 of his 21 completions went to tight ends or running backs. And those guys were covered by safeties and linebackers. Deion looked bad. Trey Boston had a rough game. And which leads to the other part is, where the heck was Hassan Reddick? Because he's a starter. Like, the depth chart says he's a starter. But suddenly we get on Friday or Thursday, and we hear about how Buda Baker is now playing linebacker. And we suspected this was maybe doing a little bit, but no, this is real. Buda Baker is not only a safety and a slot corner, he's a linebacker. And oh, let's hear that. He didn't play safety at all. He didn't play safety once on Sunday. It was linebacker. It was Hassan's spot as a linebacker. And here's the weird thing, which is the strong side, the who needs to have the size. So he's been playing Sam, and then he lines over to a slot corner. And I get why you want Buda Baker on the field. I don't get why you want Buda Baker and Trey Boston on the field for run defense, as opposed to Buda Baker and Hassan Reddick.
Yeah, and that was a bit different and not really what we expected to see out of this. And you know, it all comes down to, it's a new staff. They're figuring out where they are at just as much as you know, we're trying to figure it out. And when you look at the defensive schemes, the one thing that you and I had kind of talked about throughout the offseason was, does this linebacking corps step up? Does a guy like Hassan Reddick, you know, make the leap? Does Deion Buchanan get back to being the guy that he was?
Because in 2015, Deion was great. He was great. And he's been just there the last couple of years, whether it's injuries. And then if you go by Sunday, he was a liability.
And so, I mean, to see them in nickel as much as they were was interesting. Most teams play a lot of nickel. Don't get us wrong. That's pretty standard NFL stuff. But like you said, when you perceive this team from the beginning of the season, you and I had kind of envisioned Reddick and Buchanan, right? Like Hassan and Deion. Like that was the fit. Those were the guys. That's what made sense. And instead, you got Josh Bynes and Deion Buchanan, and Josh Bynes played adequately and did a nice job as a linebacker, and Deion Buchanan looked like he didn't belong on the field. I mean, quite frankly, like, I know that's a super harsh thing to say, but he did not look like he belonged on the field.
And when we come back to the next section of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, we're going to move on from, because there was so much bad. We're going to talk about some of these.
We could do an hour of this, so let's go on to something else.
Let's talk about the good, because there were a few good things. Let's talk about that when we come back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And now it's time to talk about some of the good things. As bad as things were, not everything was bad. What was your number one good takeaway from Sunday's game?
I think the first thing is, I didn't think the offensive line played that bad. They weren't good by any means, but they weren't abysmal. And you know, we had some concerns about what they would look like, you know, going up against a strong defense, and the Redskins have a very strong defense. And I know the Pro Football Focus scores from the game were supremely pro Skins. I saw their a bunch of their defensive line and defensive players had like scores in the high 80s and low 90s. But Bradford had a lot, you know, had time. David Johnson and Chase Edmonds had room to run. And both of those things were what we wanted to see coming out of training camp, out of the preseason. And thus far, I would say, I mean, I wouldn't give them like an A, but I would say like a C plus. And then, so, you know, I know that's, you're thinking, well, that's your positive, but think about it. That was one of the biggest question marks coming into this season, was whether or not this offensive line was going to be able to play. And, you know, there is a question now about Andre Smith. I will find out more tomorrow. But, I mean, the depth chart came out today, and he's listed as the starter at right tackle still. So I assume that's how they're going to start again. And so maybe they get things kind of going in the right direction starting on Sunday.
Well, here's the thing that I didn't notice, because I was curious about it, because I don't remember hearing their name called. But here's the stat that was incredibly impressive to me, which caters to just how good the tackles were. Because the two players that I worried about most on that Redskins defense were Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith. Preston Smith, the same Preston Smith who we both believe should be a Cardinal today. he should have been the Cardinals' first round pick. But neither Brown nor Kerrigan logged a single statistic. No sacks, no hits, not even a tackle. They were completely erased, which was incredible to see after the game. Now that's not to say that Sam Bradford wasn't pressured, because according to Pro Football Focus, he was pressured, what was on 40% of his dropbacks. But he wasn't under duress, and even the sacks that he had were not the worst kind of sacks, like the sacks we've seen before where you're just like, oh my gosh, look away, he's dead. But that was number one. I was like, oh my goodness, the tackle, like DJ and Andre Smith and then John Wetzel played half the game. They really did a number on those edge players.
They did, and I thought it was a nice job. And in a game like this, you have to pull the good as much as you can, because there was so much bad. There was so much not good in this game that you're not going to find like, hey, look at, we got an all-pro performance from this guy. No, that's not going to happen. But you have to find the silver linings. And I thought the offensive line was a nice silver lining in this game. I think the second one is, and you and I will both agree, that we saw production from Robert Kimdiche. Not just good play. We saw production from Robert Kimdiche.
Yes, he had stats, like real stats. Here's the line, and it's after the coach review. So he had four tackles, a tackle for loss, a sack, three QB hits, and a pressure. And he wasn't perfect. He did spin out of gap on at least one of the plays, but that was, we've seen him be active and not do anything, where he's busting past the line of scrimmage and then gets gets nothing. There's nothing statistical to get from that. But this was after missing a lot of time. This is, and he's got a sack, and it was a push out of bounds. It was a push out of bounds type of sack. But hey, we're seeing, and this is the guy that I'm pinning all my hopes to defensively. Will Kimdiche be a star? It's definitely a good step. That's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, and it was a big, big, big step in the positive. You saw him look aggressive, disruptive, continually disruptive. And what it does is it sets up the next game. And so, you know, obviously we're not expecting a sack a game. I mean, if he had 16 sacks as an interior defensive tackle, that's a just absurd season. But if he's doing that you know, every other game. That is huge. I mean, 8 sacks from the interior would be, I mean, that'd be monstrous. That'd be exactly what you drafted him in the first round for. And so, you know, now you're sitting here and you're not going, I hope Kim Dice shows up. You're saying, I hope he builds off of what was a career performance for him. And, you know, again, it's not like he was great. You and I aren't saying like, hey, look, I mean, Robert Kim Dice has arrived. He is a legitimate NFL starter on the, you know, we're not saying that at all. What we're saying is we finally saw what he was drafted to do, and he did it at a NFL level that he has not done before.
Also, looking at the individuals, I mean, you look on offensively, there are a couple of players that, you know, David Johnson had 2 or 3 drops, so his production could have been much more. You know, with the amount of touches he had, you couldn't be too upset with his production. But actually, what I was even more pleased about was, especially with TJ Logan inactive, which meant they had 2 running backs and a fullback, Chase Edmonds looks good. In fact, Chase Edmonds looks really good. And that could turn into a very nice 1-2 punch.
Well, and he was smooth, and he's a lot like DJ when he runs, which is kind of fun to watch because they're both very smooth runners. They're both guys that don't, you know, you watch Adrian Peterson run, it's just a different. He just runs differently. He's violent. He's aggressive. These guys are they don't look. And we're not questioning it, but they just don't look like they're having to work that hard to be as great as they are. And so to watch, you know, 2 guys do that, it was impressive. And like you said, I mean, the Cardinals running backs averaged, what, 4.7 yards per carry? It was just that they got 13. I mean, if you can't be averaging 4.7 yards per carry and only get 13 carries because – it defeats the entire purpose.
Right, right. And so, but it gives me, you know, if they keep from falling into huge holes early, that is sustainable. And I think, I honestly, as I look back at that game, is really the slow start, just getting down 2 touchdowns early. The first quarter went by fast, and then the second quarter happened, and then there was no hope. If you only get 14 plays in the first half, there's nothing positive coming out of that. I mean, there's really no coming back from that. It was once they got up 21-0, you knew, well, hopefully they give us something to build on. They never gave us anything really to build on. Another positive, hey, Andy Lee, ooh, he's really good.
I mean, we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. But, yeah, I mean, kicker or punter was a positive. I thought Chandler Jones, I mean, again, Trent Williams is maybe the best left tackle in the NFL. He had a sack, a strip sack at that. I mean, he played a very nice game. There's definitely times where he got beat, but again, you're talking about the best left tackle in the NFL. You're not talking about some guy. And so when you look at that, I was positive about that. You and I talked about it before the game. We neither one remember a single target against Patrick Peterson. So, I mean, that was good. I mean, there were some things that happened that were positives.
Yeah, definitely. There's not a ton of them, but,
they're definitely limited,
but there were things that you go, okay, Larry Fitzgerald being productive. That was great. You know, he had a couple of 27-yard plays and then a bunch of short ones. You looked at the playing time and you see that, you know, you can see where the hierarchy is, that Chad Williams really is their number 2 receiver. Christian Kirk really is their number 3. And guess who's their 4th receiver? It's Ricky Seals-Jones. They played a lot of 3 wide, and they really played it 4 wide. Where you actually had Ricky Seals-Jones not like lined up in the slot. He was lined up outside, and he was the outside receiver. And so it's going to be interesting how they use him moving forward. Like, even when Jermaine Gresham is healthy, I get the impression that that probably there will be a kind of a split in playing time where Gresham plays the base, and that Seals Jones will probably be that fourth receiver in those. As even though it's a technically it's 11 personnel, it's really basically a 10 personnel because he is lining up at you know, at 6'7", he's lining up outside, not just in the slot, but outside.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you look at the overall kind of picture from this game and this entire thing, you're looking at it and you're going, this is, you know, this is what the concerns were coming out. Now, they played out again the same as the concerns we had about this team in the first game. And so now they have to, this becomes now what kind of coaches do they have? I mean, how do they rectify these situations? What changes or adaptations do they make? And does it get better?
And with that, let's move on to the next section of the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And when we come back, let's talk about expectations. Do we change our expectations moving forward? That's coming up next at Rise Up Sea Red. Come back on Rise Up Sea Red, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And there are a lot of fans who, I mean, and understandably so, the Cardinals were ripped apart. They're near the bottom of, you know, all the power rankings. Should we immediately change what we think and hope for this team now?
I mean, is 7 wins really, I mean, is that really out there?
I'd like to think so, but I think.
I meant like, is that really like something where you go, oh, they can't, you know.
Well, here's the thing. I think most people penciled in that Washington game as one of those 7 wins. That's probably the case. I think that's one of the case here. In my mind, I had them being a competitive team going into the last month, like 7-5, 7-6, and then falling apart because their December is atrocious. But that Washington game was supposed to be a win. And when you lose games that you think you can win, that's when you start. Yeah. And looking the way they did on top of that.
Yeah. And so that's the question now is, you know, how do we readjust our expectations? I think you still look at this team as a potential 7 win team. It's just that there's a long, long way to go for them to get those 7 wins. And it's not, you know, it's not necessarily going to be the way we expect it to happen. And so I think when you look at it from that perspective, you now are looking at this team saying, okay, the first goal is to not be worse than the Bills. I mean, and so far so good, right? I mean, the Bills and the Lions are probably the two worst teams in the NFL right now after 1 week. And so with that ideal, I think you are saying, okay, well, the Cardinals are the third worst team in the NFL. Let's work up from there at this point. And I know that sounds stupid, but this isn't even like, I've seen a lot of people say, well, Bruce Arians lost his first start. You know, it took 8 weeks for them to get started. I don't think – when was the first time the Cardinals looked this bad under Arians? I mean, I legitimately can't even remember. I mean, it feels like it was the
there were a couple of games in the early part of – they didn't look inept, but they didn't look good. They probably didn't look, oh my gosh, they might not have ever looked that bad.
I mean, outside of maybe the NFC Championship game.
Oh, okay. Seattle with Drew Stanton.
But see, again, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but that's Drew Stanton, right?
Like, right.
At least then you're going, okay, that's our backup quarterback. We're not expecting a whole lot. And like, I just, it, that was just baffling to me to see that come out of here like it did, because I didn't expect it. I think that's the hardest thing about this first week is it was completely out of left field. There was nothing that we expected to see.
Right. And which leads us to, I'm looking back at that 2013 season. Week three, the Saints, they got killed. They got killed by the Saints. The third game of the season in 2013, 31-7. They had no answer. And that, but the thing is, the Saints were good. Coming into the season, the Washington Redskins were a very big question mark. Maybe we should have expected them to be better, because you know what Alex Smith teams are always? They're always good.
Yeah, they're always playoff teams.
So
they don't ever win, but
right. And so I look at Sam Bradford and Alex Smith, and I mean, look at them. They're the same quarterback with one big difference. Alex Smith wins. His teams are always good, and Alex Smith and rather Sam Bradford's teams are always middling.
Right, exactly. And so you know, you look at that, and yeah, I mean, it's just it was unexpected. It wasn't. And so maybe we do have to change our expectations, because we set our expectations. And I don't think we set our expectations extremely high. But I think when we look back now, the scoffing at any pundits that were saying, well, this could be the worst team in the NFL. Now I look back and I go, okay, well, maybe they were more right than I was about the early part of this season. I'm not going to say that this team's going to, you know, be awful. I don't think that, but give me three more weeks. And if they're sitting at 0-4 and every game is like this, you know, then I'm going to say, all right, well, maybe they are the worst team in the NFL. But again, I think right now you're kind of near that bottom anyway. So the way it can go is up, and it starts on Sunday in a game that neither you or I are expecting them to win.
Right. And so what does it have to happen? They've got to be, let's look ahead to the Rams at this point. They really kind of came together in the second half against the Raiders on Monday night, and the Cardinals get them on a short week. But if you looked at that first half, they didn't look unbeatable. And here's the thing. I think the Cardinals match up well in one area, and that's the secondary. So this will be, I mean, the Cardinals might have issues with dink and dunk teams. I think this is going to be something that they might have to deal with, as they've dealt with a couple of the past couple, 3 years, is that they could be susceptible to teams, you know, targeting the tight ends and the running backs. But Todd Gurley is a concern. And if you were worried about if you didn't like what you saw against Adrian Peterson, here comes a whole other animal, which is the younger version, the younger and honestly more skilled version of Adrian Peterson and Todd Gurley. Because after what he did last year, he does kind of look like he's that sort of special, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And so when you look at it, you've got a lot of questions coming into this game that this could get really sideways really fast. And the Rams played a pretty much, I would say, like 1.5 quarters. They didn't look great in the first half, but they managed to go in tied. I believe it was 13-13, right at the half against the Raiders team that a lot of people were saying, no, this is the worst team in football, you know, especially after they traded Khalil Mack. And so everybody's kind of like, and I was texting with buddies, and it's like, maybe this isn't going to be the, you know, butt kicking we are expecting. And then they came out in the second half, and they put on
a butt kicking on Oakland.
I mean, they did. And it was the Todd Gurley show on offense, and defensively, they come at you from everywhere. You can lament the fact that none of us know the names of their pass rushers or inside linebackers, but Wade Phillips doesn't give a damn. Like he has Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, and Michael Brockers looked like a freak out there as well. I mean, he was a top 15 pick in the NFL draft, and these guys just put on a show. They had Derek Carr completely scared out of his mind in the second half. I mean, this dude was seeing ghosts and throwing the ball away with a clean pocket because he knows it flips that fast. And when you look at it from that perspective, the Cardinals have to come out and completely change the mentality of who they were in that first game of the season. Yeah, they won the second half 6-3. Great. That's great. They looked awful in the second half, too. I mean, it's not like they looked good in the second half. Defensively, they looked better. The offense looked awful again. So they have to completely turn on their head what they did in week one to even begin to show respectability, because you saw LA toy with a team that maybe is in the same tier as the Cardinals, right? The Raiders, excuse me. And then all of a sudden they just said, okay, we've had enough. And it was over.
And so Todd Gurley, it's going to come down to this. I think what we led with the show is this. If the Cardinals can be strong against the run, things will be okay, because they'll be able to run the football. And I believe they should be able to run the football, because, you know, that's how their offensive line is built. I think against the Rams, you can run. It's going to be hard, but you can run. And I think the Cardinals will match up well against the receivers that they have. And so you're going to take away plays down the field. It's just a matter of, can you keep their defense from taking the ball away? Because, you know, things change in a hurry. And if the interceptions happen or the sack fumbles happen, then things change drastically. And that's when things get sideways.
Right. And we saw that in the Raiders game, that we were sitting there going, they don't look that special, right? Like, they don't look, I mean, they look good, but they don't look, I mean, they don't look special. Like, they don't look like the Super Bowl team that everybody's talking about. You know, oh, is this another Philadelphia Eagles, you know, dream team thing? And then all of a sudden they just started punching the Raiders in the mouth. And oh, by the way, the Raiders have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. They just started completely punching the Raiders in the face over and over and over, and daring them to stop them. And it became kind of a laugher, because, I mean, like you said, they intercepted Derek Carr twice in the second half, three times overall, but twice in the second half. They completely shut down the Marshawn Lynch portion of the Raiders offense. And guess what the Cardinals offense is kind of like? They're kind of like that Marshawn Lynch version of the Raiders offense, where they're going to pound the ball up the middle and really work on leaning on the defense and tiring them down. And we saw in game one, if the Cardinals can't go to that offense or can't run that offense for more than a quarter or a half, it's going to be a problem, because they're not built. They're not equipped right now to compete with, you know, the defensive front of the Rams, but that playmaking secondary with Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters.
So, do we want to try and do some sort of projection?
I mean, for me, again,
can they keep it below 20 points? Can they keep within two scores?
Well, and that's something I wrote about for tomorrow. So the opening line. So again, this is Tuesday night, so when you hear this Wednesday or Thursday, the opening line for the Cardinals-Rams game was 10, which is a massive line in the NFL. I mean, it is that Jess has been doing this longer than I have, where he writes about lines. I mean, a 10-point spread is huge in the NFL. And it's already up to 14.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, that is really, really unheard of in the NFL, especially in week two. Because the books and the sharps, the guys that are betting, are still trying to figure out who these teams are. And so for them to come out and set a line at 10 and then move, and then that line has already moved to 14 in a day, that is just, I mean, that is just such a big number. Like you said, can they keep it below that? I don't know. I mean, can they?
Like, can they even cover? So we're not even playing can they win. Can they cover?
I mean, that is such a huge spread. 14 points is just astronomical. And so I wrote down that I thought it was going to be 31-17 Rams.
That's a push. That's a
so
push.
I'm going to change that, and I'm going to say 31-20 the Rams are going to win. I think the Cardinals will get a cheap late touchdown or field goal to kind of put that right there. So I think they're going to get beat, and I think they're going to get beat pretty handily. But I'm also hoping that we see at least something.
Well, and me, I think they're going to respond. I think the Cardinals will respond. And while it might be a 10 to 14 point game, I think it'll be a case where the Rams pull ahead late. There'll be something. It'll be a case where, you know, we saw this with Carson Palmer, where things go sideways and he's trying to make a play, and then you get the pick six and then it's over. I don't know if that'll be the case this time, because Sam Bradford's not one to.
He's not a comeback guy.
He's not a guy who's going to try and push the ball on the field and force plays to happen. Carson Palmer would. But nonetheless, I expect to see a Cardinals team be competitive and competent.
Yes.
For 3 to 3.5 quarters before things get away from them.
Well, and that would be kind of the blueprint of the Raiders game, right? Like they hung for a half. It was still 20-13 after the third quarter. The Rams scored at the very end of the third quarter, but in the end, they didn't have enough. I mean, the Rams are a spectacularly built team. And so that's what the hope is. The hope is that this Cardinals team is able to keep up, like you said, for what, three and a half quarters, and then maybe lose the game. The hope isn't that they get blown out early and then lose the game.
Yeah, that'll be a really bad precedent. It's a bad message moving forward. But if we see progress from Sam Bradford, if he doesn't look inept, if he doesn't throw, you know, if he throws a couple touchdown passes, maybe gets intercepted once. But he's really careful with the football traditionally. So with the exception of one year when he had the 14 interceptions, you're generally not going to see him turn the ball over a lot. So hopefully, you know, we're not. So this is very non-homerish. So we're going with hopefully they're competitive. Neither one of us is predicting a victory this weekend.
And you know, if they win, you guys can call us out. That's fine. You're not going to hurt our feelings if they come out and
because you're haters.
Yeah, that, you know what? We'll take that. Yeah, we're haters.
You guys know I'm not a hater on this team. I overproject everything every year because it's no fun. It's not enjoyable to be pessimistic. And so I enjoy personally to take what the coaches say and take it from that perspective. Because what? These professionals, they cannot function going, oh, there's no chance we win this week. No, they're always looking for a way to win. They're looking for ways that they can win. And so I like to look at it that way too. But no, I'm not predicting the Cardinals win. That's still not happening.
Yeah, not this week. I mean, if they had shown signs of life in the first game, then yes. But they just, I mean, they didn't show signs of life. And so
there's hoping for 1-2.
Right. We're on to the Bears. No, I'm kidding.
Hopefully they can beat the Bears, because if they're 0-3, things will get ugly.
So, but you know what? I'm with you. I just hope that they come out, they look competent, they look like an NFL team. Because for a lot of that game on Sunday, they didn't look like an NFL team. And that's what the most concerning thing from this weekend was.
And it didn't look like they were trying. But, I mean, again, new scheme, new offense, things went sideways, whatever. And with that, hopefully we have a much more positive show to talk about next week. That'll wrap up the 201st episode of the Rise Up Seaward podcast. That's the best hour Cardinals talk on the web. We'll be back again next week, hopefully talking about something much better than a blowout loss. But until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.